Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, trying to make sense of markets. I don't know. Do they really make any sense? I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. Man, we got a big show lined up for you today. We've got to talk about this $1.3 trillion liquidity surge hitting the markets. It's coming. Does it actually do anything? Or is it just all hype? We got to go back and revisit gold leading equities into an insolvency event. There were some questions. What was they talking? What do you mean insolvency? What type of insolvency? The government's going broke? Nah. How about all this money? Well, we'll get to the TGA account and what it means to stocks, crude oil, treasury yields, gold. Does it actually do anything when all this, if this liquidity surges out into the economy? We're going to go back and revisit some questions from the treasury auction show. Several of you pointed out that maybe I was a little misleading, but unintentional. In fact, someone on Twitter reached out to me and had a really nice conversation with them. So we're going to go back and kind of clarify how the auctions work, because I didn't actually talk about that. And then discuss that, yes, these low yield bids, yeah, they actually mean something. We're going to go back in history and I'll show you why they actually mean something. We've got economic data. We've got the LIBOR issues back. I know so many people have been asking to talk about LIBOR, and I've been ignoring it because it was a non-issue, and it's going to be. All right, let's start out with gold leads us into insolvency. Now, some people said, Steve, you can't use gold miners as a proxy for gold. You're an idiot. Yeah, I know. Because so in orange is gold mining stocks, GDX. In the other, the red or the red and green is gold futures. The reason I use gold miners is because there is a relationship. In fact, if we zoom out to the 10-year weekly, you can't even see where one over the other is, because miners lead the metal. You know, most people don't trade gold. They buy and hold it. Now, if you're using GLD, paper gold, I suggest you do some homework on that. But most of you, at least from the months and months I've been reading comments and interacting with all of you on various social media platforms, you're generally invested in the miners. So why would we look at the miners? Because they're going to tell us the direction of gold, which will then tell us the direction of the equity market. Because what is an insolvency event? No, it's not the federal government going broke. It's corporations and consumers filing bankruptcy. That's an insolvency event. That is something that central bankers cannot stop. Now, one of the reasons I brought this up is because we can go on the chart now and we can look relative to the S&P 500, and we can go back to, I think we have to go out a little further. Here we go. And you can see, just as we looked at before, that mining stocks started to give away their strength before the equity market, and everyone believed the stocks were going down. By the time the equity market figured it out, mining stocks were already headed lower, which would mean gold too. If you don't believe me, we'll go back to 2008 and you can see here's gold moving down. That's a minus 30% move in gold, which would put it somewhere in the $1,300 to $1,400 an ounce range, which is kind of where I've expected it to head. I know no way it can go there. No way. But you know what that did in mining stocks? It was a minus top to bottom move, minus 67%. That's huge. Now, I will tell you this, because if that happens in the mining stocks again, and let me bring up GDX. I'm going to leave it overlaid for a moment. Well, now we can take it off because I already showed you the equity market and you see that mining stocks sort of lead this into it. If we see a minus 67% move in GDX, here we are, what you are likely to see, our prices come back down to, I got to zoom back out here, the 2015 level. So you're looking at somewhere around 13 to 14. Now, if you hear that beeping noise in the background, my friends, if you hear that, or if you're too busy enchanted by this shirt, because this is that weird shirt that does weird things. But if you hear that beeping noise in the background, beep, 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 that's the trucks backing up. Because Bond King won't be Bond King no more. Might be the Gold King at that point. That's what's going on. So if we see this big move down in miners because we're going to see an insolvency event, woo-hoo-hoo, back the truck up. All right, let's get on to this $1.3 trillion surge of liquidity coming. Now, Zero Hedge wrote an article. Several of you asked, would you please comment on this? What's going to happen? Is it a big deal? And the answer is, No, it's sensational news. Like it usually, I'm not picking on Zero Hedge here. I'm just saying you start to see stuff like this and you think, it's just sensational news. Because this probably doesn't mean what anyone else is thinking it means. So you're hearing this $1.3 trillion of treasury money is going to flood into the economy. And it doesn't it have to be inflationary? I mean, come on, it has to be. There's no way, it's not possible that that could not be inflationary, right? Well, and of course, doesn't that also mean this? The stocks have to go up after all this money is going to hit the economy at some point, as soon as Congress passes something that we know they eventually will. There's one simple way to figure out, my friends, called looking at the chart. So let's go and look at what we've got here on the FRED database. Treasury deposits with Federal Reserve banks is sitting just shy of $1.6 trillion. Now, I'm showing you the whole historical chart, so that way when we zoom in and start only looking at 2009 and forward, that you don't accuse me of not showing you all the data. The reason we're only going to look at 2009 and forward is because there's no relevance. The Treasury really didn't maintain a balance. It was something they started doing recently. So let's go forward and say, what does it mean for stocks? Does this liquidity surge mean the stocks are going higher? Well, I've got the S&P 500 overlaid here. And what you can see is, yeah, there's a little bit of a down move in the TGA account in 2015 and stocks went down, but then it went down in 2017 and stocks went up. And then the market went down in 2018 and the TGA was flat. And then the TGA went down in 2019 and maybe stocks took a little dip, maybe another little dip. Is there a correlation here? Nope, because look, you see the TGA go up. Stock prices went absolutely no relationship, no reason to think that money coming in or out of the TGA is bullish or bearish for equities. Well, then of course it must mean that interest rates are going up, because as soon as all this money gets into people's hands, they're going to spend it like crazy and drive interest rates up. And it's got to be inflationary, right? Well, maybe not. So here you can go back and see that looking at the same time periods in 2015, the TGA goes down a little bit and, well, interest rates went down. That doesn't make any, how can that be? And money goes into the economy and rates go down? How about 2016? The TGA balance goes down, yields are down-ish. Not a sharp drop, but downward trend. Here the TGA kind of is peaking out, say right around late 2018, and goes down and yields are, wait, what's this with yields going down? Now, how is this possible? Sorry, I'll make it larger. And then you see the surge in the TGA and yields did have that shock down, but had been flat. So does this mean as money comes out of the TGA that it's going to put downward pressure on yields? Oh yeah, you know it. There we go. So money coming out of the TGA is actually bond bullish? Get out. All right, let's keep going while we're at this. We've got crude oil. We'll make this bigger. Here, look, and there's no relationship with crude. Yeah, okay, in 2015, crude was going down and so did the TGA. But in 2017, crude is flattish. I mean, yeah, down a little bit, but not really much. I mean, one could argue that perhaps there's a little, I mean, the relationship is more with treasury yields. There's hardly any, I mean, if you were really stretching, you can find a bit of a relationship here. You can come back to, say, early 2015 and see a little bit of it. There's not a strong relationship here, but if there was, and we were trying to assess probabilities, that the likely direction is that if the TGA balance goes down, then that would be bearish for crude oil. How about gold? Well, it's got to be something here going on with gold. And the answer is there's really nothing. I mean, there's almost, I mean, maybe slight relationship here. Maybe the TGA going up is bullish for gold since 2018. But if anything, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me that gold would lead the TGA down. Maybe it does. It could. You can see a little bit of that here in 2015, a little bit of that in 2016. Doesn't make sense here in 2018. That doesn't happen. A little bit in 2019 or early 2019. Is this whole rally in gold due to the TGA going up? Is the TGA going down bearish for gold? I'll let you decide. Okay, so let's move on to the Treasury auctions. Okay, so here's the deal. here's how treasury auctions work. Everybody bids on them. And some people said, well, these aren't competitive auctions. No, they are competitive auctions. There are actually two auctions. There's a non-competitive that happens first, and then there's competitive happens second. So these are competitive. They are bid on by primary dealer banks, non-primary dealer banks, and foreign investors, which is largely foreign central banks. The way it works is everybody puts their bids in, and then the Treasury, U.S. Treasury, starts at the lowest bid and moves up. And they accept all the bids from the bottom, from the lowest yield up. And then where it stops, once they've reached their allocation of however much they're auctioning off, and it stops, that high, the highest bid where it ends, not the highest bid of the auction, but the highest bid of where it's filled, is the price that everybody pays. So the question is, well, is there any relevance to that 0.08% low yield bid on the 30-year? And the answer is, yeah, there is. There's a ton. Now, some people said, well, it's got to be the Fed bidding. No, the Fed can't bid at auction. In fact, that's how we know the Fed can't print money, because they're not allowed to bid at auction. They can only buy on the secondary market through the commercial banks in the form of quantitative easing, which is a reserve swap. So we know there's no debt monetization going on here. All right, so let's take a look at Treasury yields, and we're going to look at some history here. Now, I got to remember what we're doing. And the first one we're going to look at, we'll come back to that. Maybe we'll come back to that in a different order. So how do we find this? We go to the Treasury Direct, and there is the announcements, and you can look this up by auction year and auction type. And you can pull the non-competitive, competitive, whatever you want to do. So here is that 30-year auction. It was at 0.08%. Some people said has to be a typo, not a typo. So what you saw was, even though the auction went out at 1.58%, there were 5% of the bids were at or below 0.08%. We'll just assume they were all at the same rate, because we don't want to assume they went negative, but that these are actual bids. Now, if you think that's made up, here is the, out of order, the 20-year auction from November, low bid, 0.08. This is not a government employee error. If it was, it would get fixed. So what you are seeing here, my friends, is primary dealer and non-primary dealer banks and foreign, and probably not so much foreign investors. Now, we do know that the primary dealer, non-primary dealer banks are bidding for their own house accounts. It says right here, own house accounts. What does that mean? They're dealers. You know, think of them like a retailer. They're buying inventory to sell, and they're bidding on it. Now, do they probably think they're going to get this at 0.08%? No, but the fact that they bid it means that there was a possibility it could have happened. It also tells you how desperate they are to get 30-year treasury bonds. Because you got to remember, it went at 1.58%. And so effectively, they were bidding zero. So if we look at history, now I got to go look at when this was. So we went to 1999. Now, here is a chart of 10-year treasury yields. And I wanted to go back and look at a period such where there's rising rates. So 1999 was a great example. And it's right in the middle. So we're not cherry picking anything here. And there was a 30-year auction. And it went out at 6.8%. And the low bid, where is it? Was 6.049. So notice how tight they were. They're very close together. So what is it telling you? That the primary or the competitive bidders are seeing rates rise, so they're not putting a bunch of low bids in. Now let's go to another period. And I went to November 2016. So why November 2016? It was right after the election. Everybody was bulled up on inflation, and you had this sharp move higher in rates. So what would I expect to see? Well, I would expect to see a very tight relationship between the low bid and the yield of the bond. So 2.78, so nearly 3. Low yield, 2.688. Tight. So what you're seeing in this 30-year auction at 0.08%, is the dealers are telling you what direction rates are headed. That's what they're trying to tell you. They're headed lower, because a dealer would not stack up its inventory if it was going to sell it for a loss down the road. That it would not make any sense. So when all you hear all these pundits talking about, well, rates can only go up, the rates can only go up, you know, they can all, there's no other way. The dealers are telling you in the auction data that they want it and they're willing to pay lower yields because they're going to sell it to people at a higher price. So if you're going to buy a bond, or at least bid on an on bond at 0.08%, granted, they were not awarded it at that price, but if you're going to bid at that, you have to assume at some point you might get that price, but you're going to sell it for a higher price. There's a lot here. So this tells us the direction of interest rates. This is very, very bond bullish. Now, why might they do that? Well, a friend of the show, big friend of the show, I should say, Brent Johnson of Santiago Capital, generously sent this chart because I begged him for it, because that's what beggars do, because I don't know how to have a Bloomberg terminal, and then I do not have any means to chart this. Here is a net speculative position on the 30-year. It's still, even though they covered a little bit, it's still massively short. So what are the dealers doing? They're driving bond prices up because they've got a whole bunch of sellers right, or buyers right here. They know who's, at least these people are going to buy. And if they squeeze them out by driving bond prices higher, they will need 30-year bonds. And guess what they're going to pay? Any price. They will pay any price. This has happened before in history, not with the 30-year, but here is the details. Brent sent us that there was only a change in the net positioning by 32,500 contracts, which was insignificant in the big picture. But if you want to know, this is one source of buyers. There will be others. There will be a lot more. But this is what's going on. And the dealers are going to profit on this. I want you to see that. They're going to profit on this move. And the evidence is real clear. If they're willing to bid 0.08%, what do you think the speculators are going to pay someday? Maybe zero? Maybe negative? Oh, man. Negative yields on the 30-year? Woo-hoo. All right, let's get into the economic data and see what we've got going on here. Sunday night, industrial production out of South Korea dropped 1.2% after prior month at 5.5. The year-over-year rate of industrial production was a nice 8% prior month, down to minus 2.2 for October. Again, telling you the economy is slowing down. You look at the data, it's telling you the economy is slowing down. Retail sales down for month. Let's see. Service sector output was up. Industrial production predicted for the month is up, which is going to be an improvement for the why is it preliminary? Oh, this is Japan. I was like, wait a minute. Japan preliminary industrial production is up, which is good news for Japan, who has been just in terrible shape economically. Let's go on. Retail sales year over year, 6.4% coming out of Japan. I don't know why there was such a deep negative the month before. I'm not sure why that is. Moving on to China, we look at the composite PMI, a blend of the manufacturing non-manufacturing services PMIs, and what we're seeing, you know, just a decent expansion at 55, nothing too hot, nothing too cold, but just kind of a, you know, above the slight area of expansion out of China. So the Chinese economy, at least the factory and services sector, are improving. Construction orders in Japan improved from minus 10 to minus 0.1. That's pretty good. Housing starts remain bad in Japan. I mean, like I said, the data out of Japan is just not good. Looking for inflation, if we're going to look for inflation and higher bond or lower higher interest rates, well, we would want to see consumer price indexes around the world going up. Preliminary Spanish CPI stuck at minus 0.8%. How about Italy? Coming out of Italy, Italian CPI minus 0.3 last month, minus 0.2 preliminary. And no inflation there. How about the Germany? Preliminary dropped to minus 0.3%. No inflation there. You know, so we're looking around the world. We're not seeing any, you know, evidence that interest rates are headed up. Well, we do have the Chicagoland PMI, the Fed's gauge of factories in the Chicagoland area. Pretty blistering 58.2. This is a pretty strong number in any kind of data set for the PMI following last month's 61.1. So there's definitely a recovery in the factory sector going on in Chicago. Pending home sales fell minus 1.1%, and now the market's saying, well, it's because prices are getting too high. Really? They're now getting too high? And let's wrap up with to talk about the LIBOR. Many of you have been like, Steve, you need to comment about the LIBOR or the SHIBOR or whatever this thing has turned into. And I've punted on this repeatedly because I didn't want to talk about it, mainly because I had a hunch and I had talked to Jeff Snyder of Alhambra Partners. I'd say he's a big friend of the show. I'm sure he's never watched it, but that's okay. Indirectly, he's a huge friend of the show. We're big friends of him. We'll just say that. And that makes him friends of the show. He told me it wasn't a big deal, and I didn't think it was a big deal. Well, here you go. Fed put out a statement today saying that the LIBOR isn't going away until maybe June 30th, 2023. Now, what this piece does not tell us is the banks, they didn't like the SHIBOR or whatever the thing is. It didn't work for them. It was not functional enough. And so now the LIBOR will be extended for 3 more years. Yes, my friends, be sure to like, be sure to subscribe, because now you know that this alleged liquidity surge is a nothing burger. In fact, if anything, it means interest rates are headed lower. Wow, who would have guessed that? But that's great news when you're in the kingdom of bonds. My friends, I will see you on Wednesday for our Wednesday episode. Until then, I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video is provided education and information. It's not to provide investment or other advice. It's not to be construed as a recognition or solicitation by our security, finance, or instrument, or participate in a particular trading strategy. Video was paired by Steve Van Meter. The whole portion of the video is an expensive video. I do not reflect the value of financial advice, or Steve Van Meter Financial.